You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, February 14th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday, folks. Cliff Schechter casually driving off for vacation. So joining us today, the great Charlie Pierce of Esquire. Also on the program today to give us a sense of what's happening with the Oscars. That's right, Chris Rosen, ladies and gentlemen. Also on the program today, all the week's news. Just a reminder, next week we will be on vacation. We have 4 days of interviews that you have not heard, ladies and gentlemen. Some that we've pre-taped specifically for vacation, some one or two which I did on Ring of Fire, and the rest which I did from the family's USA Health Action 2014. Not all about health. Some about what's happening in Vermont with their single payer. Some about some Supreme Court cases. One about the TPP. The implications of that, good stuff. I think you'll enjoy it. So enjoy. We won't be here, but we'll still be here for you, as it were. Also, when we come back, we're going to be talking about this Comcast Time Warner deal. But just wanted to flag for you the Republic Report set up by Lee Fong is back online, and they look into public corruption of sorts. And they had a story yesterday that there may have to be a someone may have to basically pull themselves out of looking at the antitrust implications of this Time Warner, I guess, being purchased by Comcast. Li Fong writes, the recently installed head of the Department of Justice Antitrust Division, William Baer, was a lawyer representing GE and NBC in their push for the merger with Comcast. Baer said last month he's skeptical of further consolidation of the cable market. But disclosures reviewed by the Republic report that Baer will continue receiving payments from that same law firm for the next 11 years as part of his retirement practice. He may want to recuse himself. Maureen Olhausen, one of the four commissioners on the Federal Trade Commission, which oversees antitrust enforcement, provided legal counsel for Comcast as an attorney just before joining the FTC. I'm sure she has no more friends there. She also, coincidentally, represented NBC Universal in the year before becoming a commissioner in April 2012. And also, just to give you another sense of just how closely aligned former Comcast NBC people are with the bodies that will oversee this, or vice versa. After signing off on the Comcast NBC deal, FCC commissioner at the time, Meredith Atwell Baker, was hired by Comcast for an undisclosed amount. So check out the Republic Report. They did that piece, which, of course, was mirrored the next day in the Wall Street Journal without credit. So there you have it. How absolutely apropos. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Charlie Pierce.
Exit wound in a foreign nation, showing the home of the one this was written for. My apartment looks upside down from there. Water spirals the wrong way out the sink. And her voice is a backwards record. It's like a whirlpool and it never ends. And her anger and I are getting old and we still haven't walked in the glow of each other's majestic. I would say if there was a me for you. All alone at the 64 World Fair, 80 dolls yelling small girl after all. Who was at the DuPont Pavilion? Why was the bench still warm? Who had been there? Or the time when the storm tangled up the wire to the horn on the pole at the bus depot. And in back of the edge of hearing, these are the words that was repeated. And her anger and I are getting old and we still haven't walked in the glow of each other's majestic presence. Listen and I hear my words and the ones you
we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Charlie Pierce. He blogs over at Esquire Magazine, one of my favorites. Thanks so much for joining us, Charlie.
Thanks, Sam. It's good to be here.
So you had this on your blog. I want to play this clip from Fox News. It is Valentine's Day. I should also say it's also my wife's birthday. So happy birthday, Nikki. So
that's for you.
Exactly. Yes. It's always no pressure. No pressure whatsoever. No pressure whatsoever. So I want to play this because I missed this clip. And there's something about this clip that that captures almost everything that's wrong everywhere at any time. And just to set it up, I don't know what show it's on, but
it was on Fox and Friends.
Okay, yes, of course, and it was Elizabeth Perkins. Or what's her name? Wait, no, Hasselbeck. I can't even follow this stuff anymore.
And, put two stories together.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly. And she sets up this story of a kindergarten teacher who is sending home with her kids before Valentine's Day a pre-made Valentine's Day card that they can sign and hand out to all the kids in the classroom. And then we get this.
Oh, so sad. Well, here to debate that, parenting expert and blogger Jessica Gottlieb alongside author and blogger Elizabeth Esther, welcome to both of you. So is it such a bad thing if every child gets a Valentine's Day card, Elizabeth?
It's not a bad thing. I think that it's a little bit unnecessary. It's a one-size-fits-all approach. I mean, especially when you're having to give out the exact same one. I mean, Valentine's Day is about expressing your unique, heartfelt feelings for your special loved one. To, like, just robotically hand out, here's your Valentine, here's your Valentine. Like, what are we, like, it totally removes the meaning, the special memory for the kids. You can't make life 100% fair. And why not let them experience a little bit of that, like, wow, okay, while they're young, while the stakes are low, rather than, you know, they're 20 years old and they're still expecting everyone to give them a Valentine's. I don't know. It just seems, I understand the intention is good, but it's impractical, and it ends up blowing up. I mean, the kids feel like, the kids who wouldn't have gotten a Valentine, so to speak, they're getting a pity Valentine now. I mean, that doesn't feel any better.
Jessica, what's your reaction to that?
Oh, I'm sure that it does feel better. And the kids that wouldn't get a Valentine, believe me, they experience plenty of rejection day in and day out. There's absolutely no reason to be excluding them.
Okay. Now, this, of course,
where
is
do you? I mean, where do you go? I mean, this is Ayn Rand's approach to Valentine's Day.
Yes, exactly. And now, of course, we all know that this
don't give out Valentines to those little moochers who weren't going to get one anyway. You're depleting the reservoir of goodwill for the rest of us.
Yes. Now, of course, this is obviously some type of secret Obama plan.
Well, not just that, but you know, I pity the woman who actually would go on television and think that stuff up. Who's the brainiac at Fox News who thought that opinion was worth sharing with the country?
Well, I think you're on to something here about being, you know, it being some type of sort of attempt to push this Ayn Rand thing. And that's I mean, that, you know, on one hand, this is just, you know, somebody who desperately wants to get on TV and they'll say anything they can. But this notion of like, they're, you know, it is 5 years old is not too early to make these kids suffer.
Absolutely, the marshmallow peeps of the world belong only to the producers.
That's right, and you know, I mean, I think it's and the reason why I want to just start with that is that this has been a
reason you want to start with that is because it's hilarious. Don't come up with some deep reason for it.
But I do think that there has been this push to sort of inject pain into people's lives, and if you're one of those 5 year olds who somehow does not get a Valentine's Day card, you really, on some level, deserve it. And that pain and that rejection is going to somehow help you for the rest of your life to suck it up when you find out that you don't have the food to eat that you need because you have to rely on food stamps or you're getting unemployment insurance. Hey, you know, if the market says that you shouldn't have a job and shouldn't get money, then you got to suck it up. That's basically it.
No, I mean, staying with kids for a moment in my other capacity as a sports writer, I've seen people have absolute cows over the idea of participation trophies, where everybody gets a trophy at the end of, you know, T-ball.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, every parent should get a trophy for sitting through a season of T-ball, because between T-ball and Chuck E. Cheese, those are the two inner rings of hell.
So the Chuck E. Cheese, I'm not sure if that's outside of Massachusetts, but is it?
Oh, we're trying to keep it within our borders, lest the blight spread. But, no, I mean, I've had arguments with, you know, first of all, why are you wasting your time worrying about this stuff? And second of all, it doesn't have any deep societal meaning down the road. But I think you're right. I think there's a consistent attitude that now runs through this, you know, this incredible thing now where the CBO report is being used as a way to explain that Barack Obama doesn't want you to work yourself to death anymore. Therefore, something essential in America is being lost.
Yeah,
I think there's a straight line from this woman to that attitude.
Is this, I mean, is this new? I mean, obviously it's not new, but is it new in the way that it's this banner is being waved? It just seems relentless.
I don't think it's new. I don't think the attitude that a social safety net, you know, disincentivizes work or whatever is anything new. I'm sure they said it when the progressives at the turn of the last century were talking about, you know, the 8 hour day and the, right, and the 24, and you know, and reducing the work week and organizing labor. I'm sure if you go back, you know, a better historian than I would go back and find examples of that. You heard it all throughout the Great Society. I was old enough to remember that. So no, none of this stuff is new. It's taken on, I think, a more formal and more institutionalized edge right now. It is the official position of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I mean, that's the part that I sort of find, and I find so fascinating, is that what was sort of a marginal sort of puritanical, you know, it was sort of isolated and compartmentalized there, has now become almost the sine qua non of the organizing principle of the Republican Party. And we see this manifested in, you know, the what we're hearing from the real makers of the world, the Sam Zells who tanked the Tribune media company, and this guy Tom Perkins, who had earlier, I guess, in the week, maybe it was last week, had a piece in the Wall Street Journal where he was saying that what's going on with like Occupy and was equivalent to Kristallnacht. He had to dial that back a little bit, but I guess he was being interviewed last night at some forum out in San Francisco, And among the other horrible things he had to say, there was this exchange, which, you know, he sort of, I don't know if he walked it back and said, oh, I was trying to be a little bit outrageous. But I think he genuinely believes this. And I think there is really, this is a growing sentiment amongst the right in this country and the so-called makers. Let's play this clip.
What is your 60-second idea to change the world?
Okay, and I've been thinking about this as I was listening to you ramble on. and I've got it. And it's going to make you more angry than my letter to the Wall Street Journal.
I highly doubt it, but let's hear it.
Oh, you're not ready. Thomas Jefferson, at the beginning of this country, thought that to vote you had to be a landowner. Now, that didn't last very long, and the vote was given to everyone. But the basic idea was you had to be a taxpayer or a person of property to vote. That went by the boards. Margaret Thatcher tried to change that in England in what became called as the poll tax. The idea was that every single citizen of the UK had to pay something in taxes, even if they got it back in subsidies elsewhere. And if you didn't pay something in taxes, you couldn't vote. And she was thrown under the bus by her own party for trying to push that through. So the Tom Perkins system is, you don't get to vote unless you pay a dollar of taxes. But what I really think is, it should be like a corporation. If you pay $1 million in taxes, you should get 1 million votes. How's that?
Well,
So there you have it. You should get get your vote based upon how much you pay in taxes. I'm not sure if he's aware, but around the time of Thomas Jefferson, not everyone got the right to vote.
Well, around the time of Thomas Jefferson, not everybody got the right to be human. Some people were property and they weren't voting, I'll tell you that. It's amazing when you think about it. The guy said, if you pay a dollar in taxes, you can vote. Okay, fine. So if I go to Target and buy a shirt and pay the sales tax, can I vote now?
Right, exactly.
If I buy some gasoline at the station and pay the gas tax, can I vote? Or does it have to be an income tax? I don't think Tom's thought this through very well.
Well,
plus, are we really arguing about poll taxes again? We put that issue to rest 50 years ago.
It's stunning to me that this is in the, you know, and of course we live in a society now where we know that there's been multiple studies showing that we have moved from a plutonomy to a plutocracy in terms of how much guys like Tom Perkins actually affect the impact, the outcome of legislative battles. And there doesn't, I mean... What is going on with these plutocrats who now feel the need to sort of reinforce these, to go public with this stuff? I mean, I'm not surprised that they believe this stuff. It's just that now they feel they need to argue it in public.
I'm not really sure. I get a sense of a little desperation. I get a sense. I mean, they're not completely immune from the rest of the world. They know that what's stirring in the body politic now is a kind of realization that we've had. You know, people always ask me if I want to roll back the Bush tax cuts. No, I want to roll back the Reagan tax cuts.
Right.
We've had 35 years now of a really bad economic experiment. And it was funny because I was thinking, because one of the first things I covered as a reporter was the campaign in 1980. And when they sold the supply side snake oil, they did it with a smile. They did it in a kind of sunny way that this was going to change the way, you know, Americans related to their government. It was going to be the greatest thing. A rising tide was going to lift all boats. Now it's just grim. Now they're just hanging on to the advantages they gained from that particular system, and they're doing it in a very unpleasant and unappealing way.
Yeah, I guess that's there is a quality of a white knuckled sort of grip on this that they may or may not feel is slipping away from them. And you know and one of the other things that I think, you know, I know you've been talking about this on your blog at Esquire, is this, you know, the sort of the grift that is the right wing. And, you know, we saw an example of it this week with Newt Gingrich sending out his emails. We saw this with your buddy Scott Brown, also sending out, selling off their email list.
Well, I mean, you know, Sam, credit where credit's due. This is Sarah Palin. She has reinvented the ability of somebody to be a political figure and raise money without ever doing a political job or running for anything.
Yeah.
She has pointed the way.
Absolutely. And I think and what's interesting, too, though, is that we also saw the implications of this, because a guy like Tom Perkins will be sitting at a dinner table and there'll be some Republican, you know, sort of consultant sitting around the table. Tom Perkins will say this idea, whatever it is that comes out of his mouth, and that consultant will rush up to him and go, "You're absolutely right. You know, if we were just talking about, if Mitt Romney was talking about Reverend Wright, he would win this election in 5 minutes. I happen to be a media broker and I can actually set up, we can actually do commercials on this. I, of course, get 10 to 15% off the top and I've got my own production company." But that seems to be what's driving Republican conservative politics across the board now.
It's an interesting point. It was one that I was making in the blog during the 2012 campaign, where you had all these absolutely unwinnable campaigns being financed by one or two people. You had Foster Freeze and you had Sheldon Adelson floating Gingrich, and Freeze was floating Santorum, and neither one of those guys was going to be the nominee, let alone be the president. But they were kept alive because they had one guy willing to write checks. And when Joe Biden said yesterday that there is no Republican Party, that's what he's talking about. There is no Republican Party anymore as a party. There's a kind of galaxy of orbiting power bases.
Yeah.
And the Republican Party is the least of them. There are independent millionaires. There are political action committees. There are cults of personality, and I mean, there isn't a more powerless marionette in American politics than Reince Priebus.
Yeah, well, you know, I sort of look at it as like Republicanism is now the industry, and there's a series of different companies in there all vying to make more money in the context of that big industry, which is the right wing, essentially.
Right, and the Republican Party is the institutional Republican Party is the least of these.
Because there's no
center of power in the party who can rein the other centers of power in.
Yeah, I mean it raises.
I mean, is Mitch McConnell going to tell the Koch brothers that what they're doing is hurting the party?
Right.
Even if he does, they're not going to listen to him.
Right, and he knows that's where his at least part of his bread is going to get buttered. And you know, we saw this this week with the debt ceiling fight that didn't really happen, and that weird story that came out of BuzzFeed with these secret emails. You linked to that. I mean, just tell us a little bit about that, because
apparently when they voted the clean debt ceiling through the House, somebody with access to the private email server, I guess the congressmen have a private email server within the Congress. I didn't know this at the time. Apparently somebody with access to that, which means either a member of Congress or a very high-level staffer, sent around this kind of quasi-stalkerish email saying, "We're watching you, you know, you will this vote will come back to haunt you." And all I could think of was all those horror stories with the babysitter where somebody finally says, "Like, he's in the house upstairs." I mean, somebody had access to a very secure server to make these threats, which means that some Republican congressman maybe feels empowered enough independently to threaten the other members on their own email.
I have a theory that,
okay.
And here's my theory. And in this story, I guess, just came out too, that Ted Cruz was the guy who killed immigration reform in the House.
Right.
I think it's Ted Cruz. I think he's,
do you really?
I don't know. I mean, I think he could be going to like an internet cafe and
in a trench coat and a balaclava. Who's the real scary guy at the back table? I don't know. Just leave him there for about 10 minutes.
I don't
know. He's okay.
But he looks just like Joe McCarthy.
Don't make him mad.
And then, speaking also of grifts, there was a wonderful story A couple of months ago, I had Nick Troiano on from The Can Kicks Back for what would only charitably be called a debate. This story, I honestly, gave me so much joy, and I know that you also expressed some laughter on about it. But this is the organization that was sort of, well, I just tell people about it because I got a funny tweet from him today in regards to our talking about that story.
No, I mean, it's Pete Peterson Youth, basically. It was a front group for the people who want to privatize all the entitlement programs by throwing it at you know, by throwing up the you know, by setting the millennials up against their greedy grandparents, basically. And now it's broke. it spent so much money fighting the federal deficit that it went broke.
There you have it. And the best part, of course, is that all apparently they had accidentally, you know, these millennials didn't know how to work their Google groups, and they left all of their documents online for I guess it was Politico to check it out. And he emailed me, or he tweeted me, saying that I suppose straw men make better guests, Sam Cedar. The Can Kicks Back has never been in debt and has never advocated Social Security cuts. Get the facts, which I think is also their tagline for the question of the debt as well.
You mean never advocated Social Security cuts? No, they're advocating quote unquote Social Security reform.
Right.
And they're doing so with the blessings of the Pete Peterson Foundation, which is about cutting Social Security and privatizing it so Pete Peterson's friends in the hedge fund industry can get a hold of the trust fund. Okay? I mean, we all have to pretend a little bit in this business, but we don't have to pretend that much.
Yes. And the best was, is I think it was an email from Nick Troiano that was quoted in there saying, "We got to hope for another miracle like Stan," talking about a hedge funder who had given them over half of, I guess, their, or 40% of their annual budget last year in one check. But that to me is also part of the grift. I mean, you know, these guys went on, and I think it was, I don't know if it was Kick the Can or Fix the Debt, went on and did a Twitter Ask Us Anything, and they realized that they don't have a single constituent other than a couple of hedge funders who are funding this thing.
Yeah, I think it was Fix the Can, actually.
or kick the fix.
I don't know. But they have no constituency in the country. What they have is a mailing list and a couple of guys with a checkbook.
Yeah, and the money just keeps flowing. It's just, I mean, I vacillate between thinking the left needs more money to carry this message to. Between that and to it, just it has so sort of muddled what they're doing. It is just created a machine that where every cog in that machine is just like, I'm going to do whatever puts as much cash in my pocket as possible, and the everything else be damned. And it's fascinating to see it eat itself. It's a perfect sort of example of how money really can destroy, I guess, even as much as I don't agree with their policies, but even what they're trying to do on some level.
Yeah, I mean, you eventually you're beholden to whoever it is that's paying the light bill. And, you know, I think that, you know, the real damage the money is doing to the body politic is happening in the states. It's not happening at the national level. The national level, as you said, it's eating each other. But at the state level, where you can buy a state senator for a hell of a lot less than you can buy a U.S. senator, that's where the real policy damage is being done.
Yeah, and
I mean, this anti-gay law in Kansas is astonishing to me.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
I mean that would get as many votes as essentially Kansas is going to codify that both public and private entities can discriminate against gay people. That's the law.
Right.
So an ambulance could refer, a city ambulance could refuse to come to the house of a gay couple.
Now, we should say, in fairness, it is an act concerning religious freedoms with respect to marriage. So you make it seem like it's not nice. But
what's the line from the Maltese Falcon? The cheaper the crook, the gaudier the patter?
There you go.
The worse the law, the nicer it sounds. Remember the Clean Skies Initiative?
Yes. And the was it Clean Skies or Healthy Skies?
No, it's Clean Skies, the Clean Skies Initiative.
The bill would allow not only private businesses, but state officials to withhold services from gays and lesbians as long as it was motivated by, and this is the nice part, a sincerely held religious belief of an individual or religious entity regarding sex or gender. So essentially, this is like, and I don't know why it would... I guess it's only sex or gender, so they're not saying, you know, we're going to have a problem with a mixed race couple that wants to come and eat at our restaurant. We're just going to keep it to anybody who is gay, or maybe arguably anybody who supports marriage equality.
Yeah, I don't know what that. Yeah, the last part is obviously why. I mean, the whole thing is wide open for mischief. But the idea that this would actually be seriously considered by a state legislature in the United States of America in 2014 is astonishing to me. I mean, Kansas has gone completely insane.
Yeah,
North Carolina has gone insane recently, but Kansas has been there for an awfully long time.
And I mean, again, is this more of that white knuckle? I mean, I also recently had on a guy who had an issue with showing. Gay couples on Food Network programs, and I've really been doing some high-minded stuff as of late, as you can tell. But this to me.
Oh, you sound remarkably good for somebody who's obviously broadcasting in a hazmat suit.
Yes. Well, this is another thing where it's just sort of, at the very least, for these people, time has simply passed them by. I mean, this is
the world having changed. Yeah, you're right.
And they're just sort of lashing out at it. I mean, for God's sakes, in Kentucky now, we're not fully there, but they have to recognize, according to their highest court, they have to recognize marriages from other states. And so Massachusetts, once again, exporting your, you know, cats and dogs raining from the skies.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is where the damage is being done. Let's keep an eye on the states because that's where it's really happening. But again, I mean, as we said, I mean, you've got all of these independent power bases, all of these people with all kinds of money that has been unleashed on the system through Citizens United and through, you know, the generally toothless way we regulate campaign finance prior to Citizens United. And they've developed their techniques for politically organizing around money, whether that's just to, you know, line their pockets, which is the case with Palin and I suspect Gingrich and whatever comes from Santorum in 2016, or to run their campaigns independent of any kind of responsibility to the party or to the country.
Yeah. Now let's talk a little bit about Chris Christie, because there's new news. I mean, it's really coming every day, and I think. I don't know. Give me your sense. Is this even a political story anymore as much as it is just a good corruption story?
Well, of course. I mean, it's a political story in that he's still, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but he's still the best candidate they have to put up against Hillary Clinton if you look at the rest of them. But so it's still a political story. I went back and looked a little bit at T. Harry Williams' wonderful biography of Huey Long. I think what you're dealing with in New Jersey is Huey Long, you know, Huey Long for the information age, basically. A guy who's found using an entire state, not necessarily to line his pockets, although his friends have done work very well, but to increase his own political power in the country.
Right.
And I think that's what he's getting caught at now.
Yeah.
Whether it will stick for 2016, I have no idea. But if you look around, you know, Scott Walker's got the same problem in Wisconsin. People who are touting Scott Walker, I mean, the problem with Scott Walker in Wisconsin is his scams are pretty penny ante, but compared to, you know, what the stakes Christie's playing for. But, you know, I think as long as there's a steady drip, drip, drip of subpoenas and a steady drip, drip, drip of news coming out of the legislature, he's got trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I am convinced that his 2016 hopes are gone. I mean, I do think that, you know, there's always been, I grew up in Worcester, and my dad is a fairly left-leaning guy, but there's a quality about Chris Christie that appeals to even guys like my dad, who are, you know, and I don't know if that's sort of a Massachusetts to New Jersey thing, but there's something about those two states that are similar in some ways. I don't think Massachusetts.
I didn't know you were a son of the heart of the Commonwealth.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
So am I.
Are you from Worcester?
My father was the assistant principal at North High for 30 years.
Oh, you're shitting me. I went to... Oh, we got to... We'll cut that out for the tape delay.
Hey, nice.
I went to Darby.
Oh, it's good to work for a podcast professional.
I went to Darty, and
my father was the assistant principal at Commerce, and then when they opened Darty and closed Commerce and Classical, he was the assistant principal at Darty for the first couple of years, then went back to North.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah, my grandfather was a Worcester cop.
I didn't know that. My dad went to Classical.
So there we are.
There you go. Yeah.
I mean, no. you can't get away from it. There are people from Worcester on the moon. I swear to God.
Well, that's probably, but they.
So you West Side kid or what?
Yes. Okay. Newton Avenue North, right around from Daugherty.
Oh, sure. Okay. Tatnik Square.
Yeah. Tatnik Square.
This is scintillating radio for you people out in Idaho.
Absolutely. Tatnik Square is where we're talking about. We would go down to the Friendlies. We get a case.
Hey, we'll go down on Shrewsbury Street to the Parkway and get a meatball sub.
There's a lot happening on Shrewsbury Street these days.
Yeah, I know. I drove up a little while back. It's not the place. My friend Angelo from high school used to run East Side Liquor Store, but so I spent a lot of time on Shrewsbury Street. But
I don't know if that was one of the few places that we could buy at the time.
No, it definitely wasn't, and you didn't want to mess with Angelo's family. So.
I'll note that. I'll pass it on to my cousins who are still in town. But, I agree with you that Christie has that sort of appeal in a general election. But I just don't think – I mean, I think the reason why he's not going to get through this, even if he does somehow escape all the subpoenas and the federal and the state investigations that are going on, is because he has no – natural constituency in the Republican Party anymore that would get him through the primaries. That's basically my take on it.
Yeah, I thought he could possibly finesse that by just blowing off Iowa because, you know, the Iowa Republican Party is nuts. And then, you know, possibly just minimizing South Carolina, going up to New Hampshire and racking up a big win there. And then, kind of avoid those parts of the primary process. You know, he'd have to stake a lot on Florida in that case. But, you know, there was a constituency for him in Florida. But now, you know, I'm not sure he can take anything for granted. And I don't think he could do that now, because if he's going to run, if he's going to run as a credible Republican candidate, right now he's got to run everywhere. And you'll notice that he's picking up support from the really hard right simply because he's looked upon as a victim of the liberal media.
Yes, I mean
he's getting a little bit of applause from over there now that he wouldn't have gotten before. He's going to CPAC.
Yeah.
Where I guarantee you he will be greeted rapturously.
And this is after he was sort of not invited, I guess, or disinvited in 2013.
Right. I mean, but he knows if he wants to run, he knows what he has to do. So I mean, I don't think that path of blowing off Iowa and winning New Hampshire and making your case in Florida and then going to Michigan and Pennsylvania, places where you might sell a little bit better. I don't think that's open to him anymore. He's got to romance the people who didn't like him in the first place.
Right. And I think he can only do that by still slamming, I guess, the New York Times and MSNBC.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I don't know that that's a winning strategy, but that's what he's got left.
Yeah. All right. Lastly, let's just talk about what's happening in Tennessee with this with this Volkswagen UAW. There's a vote there that I think it's going to end today. This is, we've talked about it on this program. Volkswagen, I'm convinced that they're going to bring that expansion of that factory no matter what happens, but they would rather see a union because they want these worker councils. Bob Corker, the senator from Tennessee, started out last week saying, I'm not getting involved in this. He's never been, too much, I guess, associated with being anti-union. But all of a sudden, the next day, he turned around, and it was as if the Republicans in Tennessee said, no, you got to get into this fight. I don't see how this is legal. How does the National Labor Relations Board not say, hey, what are you doing?
Well, first of all, we still only have half a National Labor Relations Board, right? I mean, unless I lost track, it's not fully staffed yet. But this started in the Tennessee legislature, where they threatened Volkswagen with revoking all their tax breaks if they allowed this thing to happen. This to me is completely bizarre, because this is, you know, this is the U. I mean, it's the UAW. Volkswagen's on board with this. This is what I don't understand. Volkswagen wants this. You know, they're very happy to have this thing come in. I'm not Machiavellian to believe that they're saying that up front and like behind the scenes maneuvering not to have it happen. I think they want it to happen. And you've got the Republicans in the Tennessee legislature not counseling or not putting up with unionization or worker organization of any kind. Right to work means absolutely workers cannot organize at any level under any circumstances, even when the company wants it. And they're willing to, you know, endanger their relationship with Volkswagen to do it. And why Corker waded into it is absolutely, I have absolutely no idea.
I mean, what do you think is animating this? I mean, are they just so afraid that if this one plant unionizes, that it's going to unleash a resurgence? I mean, Tennessee, I guess, you know, 30, 40 years ago had a 25% rate of private unions.
Well, I mean, Martin Luther King went to Memphis where he died because of a labor strike.
Right.
I mean, Tennessee was a fairly unionized state. I think they look at these workers' councils as kind of a backdoor, and, you know, they've worked to demolish the political and social power of unions for 50 years, and now all of a sudden you've got a company worth, a European company, you know, bringing these European ideas of these workers' councils in, and I think, you know, that, I mean, that's something that makes them nervous. They could, because the one thing that scares them to death is a revival of organized labor in this country.
Right.
That's the one thing that scares everybody to death. And, you know, but to me, I don't understand why the constituents of these legislators down in Tennessee aren't up in arms at this. I mean, you've gone out of your way to give this company all the tax breaks, and now you're going to pull it back because they want to bring in some sort of workers' council and affiliate with the UAW? It's crazy.
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. We're going to probably hear, I imagine by the end of day today, we will know what the results of that election are. And the only thing that I think is really jeopardizing the chances of them unionizing is that it's frankly the weather. There was at least a couple of shifts that were canceled, and so there's going to be less voting, because I guess you need 50% of the workers,
right,
regardless of whether or not they had the opportunity to vote.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine what the executives in Germany and Volkswagen are thinking of all of this. They must think we've lost our minds.
Yeah,
they're living perfectly, you know, well-ordered, affluent lives with a perfectly well-ordered, affluent workforce in Europe, with healthcare and everything else, with these workers' councils.
I wonder what the German word for these rednecks are effing crazy is.
I don't know, but I'm sure it has 900 letters.
All right. Charlie Pierce, thank you so much for joining us
today. Thanks, Sam.
I really appreciate it. A lot of fun.
I'll say hi to Worcester for you. Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. I didn't know he was... Everybody has Worcester roots in Massachusetts.
That made it even more special.
Yeah. We probably should have done a little more Scott Brown stuff.
But frankly, dude, I was a little concerned at the lack of Scott Brownness in the generality of that conversation.
Yeah, we were not appropriately, paying homages to Scott Brown. So I hope he doesn't hear it. He'll be wicked pissed. All right, we got to take a break. Well,
are you blind? Do you have an invention? Well, either way, I can help you with my Rickety Rad email list.
All right, we are back. I mean, we'll be back in just a moment. Joining us next, ladies and gentlemen, will be the old, our former movie critic reviewer on a weekly basis.
Christopher Rosen.
Christopher Rosen of, I think it's Huffington Post now, will be joining us to give us an Oscar preview. We'll be back in just a moment.
Yeah.
All right, folks, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Coming up next, we have Chris Rosen. And for all of those of you who are not familiar with Chris, well, allow Jimmy Reefercake to provide you with the answer. This is his. This is Chris Rosen's old theme song. Here it is.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Reefercake's got to ask. He said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
Now, to be fair, that's not even the updated version, Chris. Are you there?
Yeah, oh, I'm here, Sam. That is a throwback theme.
That's the throwback. Now, we also have this one, I should say. I got another one here that sort of counteracted that.
Right.
I said, oh, me, I'm on Chris Rosen's side. Sammy, we're just now making fun of a guy. Me, I'm on Chris Rosen's side. You can find the man at MovieLine.com.
Wow, that is now that was actually the sort of the
awesome
rebuttal to
right,
but we then
and
we had the
wrong
amended one. Yeah, here's the amended one.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com.
That makes for a movie phone.
Big shot senior editor.
Vertical editor.
Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob.
I'm actually in an office now.
Jimmy Reefercake's got to ask. You said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
Now, Chris Rosen, none of those have been updated, right?
Nothing has been updated. HuffPost Entertainment is my home now.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Chris. It was really great to talk to you.
Oh, thanks, Sam. It was good talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Good catching up.
So, Chris Rosen, has it really been a year since you've been on this program?
I feel like it might have been, yeah. You don't invite me anymore. You don't send me flowers.
Huge
oversight. It's over.
Well, I wanted to invite you back today because, A, it's Valentine's Day.
Right.
This is my way of sending you flowers.
Right.
B, the Oscars are coming up. We're going to be on vacation next week, and there's a chance that I won't be around the following Friday. And so this would be the last chance to do that. And I ran into our friend Lauren on the train the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren, who used to be longtime listeners will know that Lauren used to be the producer of the the Cedar on Sundays program and on the Sam Cedar in the Mornings program. And she told me that I have reason to congratulate you.
Yes, I'm getting married, Sam.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I know.
How did that happen?
I have no idea. Spells, I guess.
Now,
spells and sorcery.
My understanding is you're marrying spells and sorcery. You're marrying your longtime girlfriend.
Yes.
I don't know if you want to say her name or not. I know.
Case. I'll say Case. That's fine. First name.
Yeah. Okay. You don't want to necessarily embarrass her by giving her last name. But my understanding, which I didn't know, is that you guys met while she was working at I don't even know if work is the right, but she was interning
at Air America, but she did a lot of work. She probably did more work than me.
Well, but that's not really what I'm saying. I'm talking about
she wasn't my intern.
Really?
She was an intern.
Really?
Why would I have an intern, Sam?
Well, I don't know. Was she working on the show that you were working on?
No, she was on the website.
I mean, there's a lot of that's I don't know how appropriate that is, frankly.
I mean, I think we're kind of well past that, don't you?
Well,
who's gonna care?
Well, I don't, you know, don't make me call Mark Green. And
yeah, they'll sue me for a severance.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like you're making a little distinction without a difference here, buddy.
I don't know what those words mean.
I know. I know you don't. I know you don't. So, now, Chris, what are you doing at Huffington Post? I mean,
I'm a senior entertainment editor.
Wait, you're the senior entertainment editor?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people who work at the entertainment team. You know, we have a huge team, very, very successful section.
Are you in charge?
No.
No. Okay. Yeah.
Please.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I didn't. That would have been. So you're not managing anybody. You're just the senior entertainment editor because there's no junior entertainment editors.
Not yet.
Okay. So that's in the offing. How long have you been the senior entertainment editor?
Oh, I don't know, about maybe a few months. The titles change, you know, a few times, but I've been on the entertainment team for over a year. So that's
I see. And so that's how they give you the senior title?
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, you didn't ask? You just got the...
You don't want to question those things, Sam.
There are people who are really upset. I'm getting IMs that you're verified on Twitter.
Are you verified, Sam?
No, I'm not verified. I don't.
No?
I would not accept verification.
I'm surprised. I mean, you would not. Oh, yeah, that's good. That's a good line. You would not accept verification, right?
But senior entertainment editor, I worked at a Chinese restaurant back in the day in Somerville. And because I was the only waiter there and I was the only person who spoke English at the time, I appointed myself to be day manager. I got to say, that sounds a little bit about like what you got going on over there.
No. Come on.
Are people aware that you're referring to yourself as senior entertainment editor?
I'm not. You are. I'm just as my little bio or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't walk around being like, I'm senior entertainment editor. Here's my card.
Yeah. Now, the people are asking me, like, why does Twitter verification? Because nobody, we wouldn't want people to parody your account. Are you there?
I mean, I'm here. You know,
what are you doing? Are you drinking?
No, I'm not drinking. I was trying to think of something pithy, and I just couldn't.
Right. Oh, that makes me feel sad. Of course you can.
Think of something pithy? Yeah, I'm sure.
Come on. All right, let's get down to brass tacks here, all right? I mean, I've got a hold of the senior entertainment editor of Huffington Post. I'm not going to waste my time on this mishigas.
Right. I mean, at least not until you're verified on Twitter.
That's right. What's going on? Have they already come out with the Oscar nominations or what?
Yes, of course they have, Sam. They came out like last month.
Okay.
Come on, you have to know that. You host a new show. You have to know these things.
I assume that they had. I wasn't sure if they were waiting till the last minute. No, I mean, that or yeah, okay. No, they have.
So the voting, yeah, they have. And the voting starts today and it goes to next week, to the 25th, basically.
Oh, so we
And then the Oscars are held, you know, or 2 weeks, I guess it is, 25th. And then the Oscars are held March 2nd.
Oh, so we may be influencing the vote in some way.
Yes. Oh, yeah. 100%. We have that kind of power.
All right. So let's just stay with the big movies. All right. Not
right.
The...
What have you seen, Sam? Because I know you don't get out much.
Well, I don't know what the nominees are. I neglected to pull those.
You didn't even prepare? Ugh.
I mean, my producers theoretically.
What's your laughing Muppet? Your laughing Muppet should have told you. I forget his name. Matt?
Wow, you remembered my name. I feel honored.
Wow. The laughing Muppet. All right. There we go. So, all right. Why don't we go through them? Why don't you tell us what are there? And
I actually thought it would be funnier if Sam didn't know, frankly. This is Michael.
Hey, Michael.
How you doing? Go ahead.
Pretty good.
Yes, you guys
all
really get along.
Well, let's see. I'll go through the nominees alphabetical order, Sam. You tell me what you think you've seen or what you heard of.
Okay.
First, American Hustle, Best Picture nominee.
Seen it. I saw it on a screener, and part of it was shot in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Yeah, it was. Did you like it?
The museum. They shot at the Worcester Art Museum. All right, so let's go on to the next one. Let's get the list down, and then we can go through them.
Okay. Captain Phillips also nominated for Best Picture.
I have that screener. I didn't watch it. I figured I saw it when he did that FedEx movie.
Who do you know at Sony that's sending you these screeners?
I'm in SAG.
Oh, yeah. Do you vote then? Did you vote for SAG Awards?
Yeah.
God help us if you did.
I did, but that's the only way that you can get the screeners. So
okay. Oh, I
just go on and I just pick the person.
Pick your favorites.
Yeah.
You're like, where's Michael Ian Black? Why isn't he on here?
Right. Exactly. I voted for him. I wrote him in on everything.
Dallas Buyers Club, also Best Picture nominee.
Have the screener. Haven't seen it.
Gravity.
Don't have the screener. Haven't seen it.
Her. Spike Jonze's Her.
What? Her?
The one with Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson's voice.
Hadn't even heard of it. Okay, so Her.
Nebraska.
Nebraska?
Yes.
That's by that guy who did Election, right?
Yes.
Haven't seen that. What else we got?
Philomena.
Philomena? Are you making these up?
No.
Okay, Philomena. Who's that? Is that the Coen brothers?
No, it's not. It's Stephen Frears. It's the one with Judi Dench and what's his face?
No, I didn't like, you know, her the Bond movies. Would not watch that. Okay.
Steve Coogan. And then 12 Years a Slave, which I'm sure you've heard of.
I've heard of. I have the screener. I have not seen it.
And then The Wolf of Wall Street is the last one.
Oh, wow. Wolf of Wall Street. So the Coen brothers got shut out, huh?
Yeah. Is that the only movie you saw this year? Inside
no,
Lady
I didn't
David?
See that. I heard about that one. So, okay. Wow. Is this how many they usually do? It seems like so many movies.
There's nine. It is anywhere between 5 and 10. So, and the last few years have been 9.
And so was this must have been a great movie year.
It was a great movie year. All these movies were great. I mean, honestly, there's really not one of those movies was actually bad for once.
All right.
The worst of those movies, I would say to me, was Dallas Buyers Club, which I thought was pretty not great. But even that, you're like, okay, at least they're really good in it.
I thought I had seen some of these movies. I guess I didn't. But I mean, I guess the only one I've seen is American Hustle. But with that said, John Ridley, I worked for John Ridley on Fox's The Show. And he's the guy who wrote 12 Years a Slave, but I would not vote for that because he was anti-union with the WGA strike. So it still may be a good movie, but I just wasn't going to give him the vote.
Oh, well, he actually wasn't even nominated for WGA because of that. So
oh, really?
He wasn't even eligible at the WGA awards, interestingly enough.
Oh, all right. Well, so
but it was nominated for an Oscar, and it will probably win an Oscar.
All right, so let's go down the list here. American Hustle.
Well, okay.
What did you think of that movie?
I loved American Hustle. I thought it was really funny.
Huh.
People don't like it. It's the polarizing film, in quotes. But I thought it was really funny. Everyone in it is really good. Jennifer Lawrence, Bradley Cooper's hilarious. You know, I love David O. Russell movies.
I watched that with Nikki. We both liked it. And then I talked to, like, you know, I was talking to Richard Kind, you know, who's an actor in many movies. He thought it was muddled. Same thing from my buddy Brad Anderson, a director. He thought it was muddled. I don't know. I got the whole thing.
I didn't think it was muddled either. And I also thought those kind of critiques were silly because who cares? It's not really about that. The story is secondary to the performances and the characters.
I don't feel comfortable knowing just one movie on this list and agreeing with you on it.
I cannot believe you have not seen 12 Years a Slave. That's actually shocking to me.
I got the DVD. I just haven't had a
chance. Well, put it on.
Dude, are you aware I had another child? You're not even aware.
Yeah, so what? The kids go to bed early. Put it on.
Oh, no. You don't know. You don't know what's going on. I can't. Are you guys planning to have kids?
Oh, yeah.
Is the state going to allow that?
Maybe.
I can't wait. I cannot wait. I hope you have triplets. All right.
So anyway, yeah, American Hustle was great. Okay. Basically, here's all you have to know. Since I'm not going to go through all these movies with you. You haven't even seen them. But
well,
here's basically it.
Captain Phillips.
Captain Phillips
isn't that,
is good,
did
but it's not going to win.
When he played the FedEx guy,
that's Castaway. You dumbass. Castaway, not Captain Phillips. A different movie.
All right, but
I have a question.
He's got the same scruff.
I have a question about Captain Phillips because I did see it. And I liked it. It was a good movie. But maybe this is in the theme of this show. Just even visually, it's kind of a right-wing movie, right?
I don't think it was a right-wing movie.
You don't think so?
I've seen that critique of it, but I thought it was basically presenting the what happened, and then you draw your own kind of opinion on how you feel the American military complex handled that situation.
I don't even object to that at all, per se, knowing the story, and it's terrifying what happened to him. But I'm just saying we're at a point now in action movies where, like, the visual is this little tiny lifeboat that Captain Phillips is on with these Somali guys, and then, like, this massive aircraft carrier and, like, the whole weight of, like, the world's most powerful military. It just seemed kind of bizarre, just even visually. I'm not even talking
spoiler
about...
Spoiler alert or what?
What?
Spoiler
alert. I mean, it's not a spoiler alert. This thing
it's
happened.
It's not a spoiler. Like, that's what happens early on in the movie.
Okay.
I don't know. I was wondering, do you think that's reading too much into it?
I think it is. I think you could look at it the other way and be like, wow, look how ridiculous it is that we put this much, you know, that this is the American military. This is how we responded to a situation like this. And, you know, the way that Paul Greengrass, who directed it, he also directed United 93, which I think Sam likes. But maybe I remember that wrong.
I didn't see that. That was the I didn't see that.
You know, and I think the way he does things, you know, it, like, kind of lets you draw your own conclusions, let's say. And the way he presents the Somali pirates is in a way that they're not actually demonized, which I thought was really nice, or, you know, at least an interesting way to go, and not necessarily like what you would have seen from a typical Hollywood blockbuster about this story, where, you know, they would be clearly the villains and over the top evil, and you just couldn't wait for them to get killed. And here it's like you get to know the pirates and you understand where they're coming from, and that kind of, like, puts everything into, like, a gray area that, you know, I think is tricky for audiences to like. A lot of the movies this year are like that, which is, you know, kind of fun, but also causes problems for some audiences.
All right. Well, what was that movie? The Gray Lion, that movie with Brando about the Germans. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
No, of course not. All right. It's a incredibly famous movie, but there's no reason for the senior entertainment editor of the Huffington Post to know that. You'd have to be the executive senior, probably. Dallas right. Buyers Club. So you didn't like this? I've heard good things about that.
It's okay. I mean, like, Matthew McConaughey is really good in it. He's probably going to win Best Actor. Jared Leto is going to probably win Best Supporting Actor for both for their roles in this film. But I just thought the script was a little, like, movie of the week-ish. And, you know, I think there's a lot of, there's a lot out there about whether or not the guy who, do you know the story?
No, vaguely. It's about getting drugs in, right? It's about, what is it?
So it's about this guy, Ron Woodruff, who was, like, in the 80s, was, like, a hustler kind of guy, and he ends up becoming HIV, infected with HIV because of all his promiscuous sex and needle use, and he's a heterosexual male. And then he, like, basically, like, fights the system, and the story shows him, like, basically helping all these, like, AIDS-affected, you know, homosexual men and homosexual women and transgender, you know, women and stuff like that. And the real story is he might have actually been bisexual, and he wasn't actually homophobic, which is how the film portrays him as, which gives Matthew McConaughey this great arc to play, because he goes from being a totally intolerant jerk to, like, understanding the plight of, you know, other cultures and other, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I kind of think it's not necessarily genuine, but it's a nice movie, you know, and the story is a little movie of the weekish, and, you know, it's fine. But Matthew McConaughey's really, really good. He lost, like, 50 pounds for the role.
Well, yeah, and that you should get an Oscar.
When that happens, they usually win, right.
I didn't get an Oscar when Marin and I did our competition to lose weight, but whatever. The Academy overlooked that. Let's go to Gravity. What?
Gravity's great. Did you see Gravity?
No, but I'll go.
Oh, man. That movie is killer.
It's on my list. It's going to be on a big screen, though, right?
Yeah, probably big screen would help. I mean, it's so, so good. It's Alfonso Cuarón, who directed Children of Men, which is a great movie you probably haven't seen. And Sandra Bullock plays an astronaut. She gets lost in space.
Yeah.
Basically through a series of accidents. And it's just really, really, really good.
What about her?
So incredibly intense. Her is all right. I mean, it's Spike Jones, who directed, like, you know, all those movies, Adaptation, being John Malkovich, Where the Wild Things Are. And it's kind of like, you know, about a guy who falls in love with his computer operating system, voiced by Scarlett Johansson. So it's kind of like they feel like it's of the moment, let's say, because of how reliant we are on technology.
Does
but
the operating system support the occupation? I'm sorry.
Let's go to Nebraska.
Nebraska, Alexander Payne, you rightly knew, directed Election.
That's
this
right.
is about an old man played by Bruce Dern who is in the throes of dementia and thinks he won a Publisher's Clearinghouse sweepstakes, so he travels from Montana to Nebraska with his son, who's played by Will Forte, and that's basically the whole movie.
Okay, that sounds interesting. What did you
think? It was okay. I liked it. It's all right. It's a little bleak. It's black and white. But that's not why it's bleak. I mean, it's just like about old people getting old and how you react to your father and mother when they're old and stuff.
The Young Lions also was in black and white. You should check that out. I know you won't because it's black and white. Philomena. What is that?
Philomena is great, as shocking as that is. It's based on a true story about this woman, Philomena Lee, who when she was a kid had a child out of wedlock in a Magdalene Laundry in Ireland, and they basically just took her child away and put it up for adoption without telling her, and she lost her son then for 50 years, and like 50 years later, this journalist, Martin Sixsmith, just hears her story and decides to try to go find her son with her. And they, you know, the whole thing kind of, it's like a mystery about what happened to her son, and you know, I don't want to spoil it for you, even though it's a true story, but it takes a lot of twists and turns that you're really not expecting.
You know,
and
I'll tell
really
you something.
Good.
Judi Dench, I didn't like her as Q or M in the Bond movies, so I'm not going to watch that one.
No. Okay.
Forget it.
Well, she's actually really good in it, and it's really funny.
12 Years a Slave, I've heard a lot about it, so, you know.
I cannot believe you haven't seen 12 Years a Slave.
Dude, I don't get out.
I know, but just watch it. It's like the most important movie of the entire year.
All right.
People have been talking about it for so long.
Okay.
Christopher Rosen learned what slavery was.
Was that? You wouldn't believe what Matt just said about you.
I heard Matt.
What about Wolf of Wall Street? What about that? Oh. Is that good?
That's amazing. Wolf of Wall Street is great. It has no chance of winning, but it's really, really good. Martin Scorsese and Leonardo DiCaprio.
What
it's
was
about...
your favorite movie of the year, Chris Rosen?
It's a toss-up, probably Gravity, but also Wolf of Wall Street and American Hustle were very good as well.
All right, so those are your three top favorite movies. Which one do you think is going to win the Oscar?
I think 12 Years a Slave is going to win. A lot of people think Gravity might win because it has the most nominations. Gravity had 10 nominations along with American Hustle. 12 Years a Slave have 9 nominations. Gravity is going to win a lot of technical awards because of all the cinematography and the visual effects and the sound effects and the score. So it's going to win like 5 or 6 Oscars. A lot of people, and it might win Best Director also. So it might end up winning, you know, like a lot of Oscars, people think that means Best Picture, but I still think 12 Years a Slave is going to win Best Picture.
Okay. What do you do on a daily basis?
I do all kinds of work, Sam. I'm taking a large portion of my day out to talk to you about this stuff.
No, I know, but I'm just curious. Like, what is it that, now, are you reviewing movies now or what?
No, I don't review movies. I do interviews. I do features. I do a lot of editing. We do a lot of news stories.
Who's the last person you interviewed?
Did you interview Leo DiCaprio?
I did not interview Leonardo DiCaprio. I interviewed somebody recently, and I just forgot who it is already.
Now,
but I do interviews a lot. I mean, when you do so many interviews.
You forgot who you interviewed?
Yeah, when you do so many interviews, you know, you kind of lose track.
All right. Fair enough. When was it?
That's a fair point.
When was it?
Probably last week.
Probably last week?
Yeah,
it was last
week.
You lose track of time, too,
what?
I guess. Now, let me ask you this.
Tough.
Did you break this story about Leonardo DiCaprio's pretty atrocious voice kept him out of Moulin Rouge?
I didn't break that story, but we picked that up from Variety, who had a very lovely feature on Leonardo DiCaprio, and we wrote it about it.
I see. That's the – wait a second.
That's how aggregation works.
You said this Oscar season is so boring, you wrote?
It is so boring.
Why?
Oh, my God, it's been going on forever. These movies have been out for 6-7 months. 12 Years a Slave premiered in September. This is February 14th. We're still talking about it. Same with Gravity.
But
it's
wait,
just a long
isn't
season.
That how it
I
always
really think
works?
They should be about, this year it was longer because of the Olympics. Last year the Oscars was actually on like the 24th, I think.
Mm.
And this year, because of the Olympics, they pushed everything back into March. So that means you're going for Oscars in March, which is 2 months after the end of the year. It's just like, who cares at this point? We're beyond 2013 movies. I just think it should be earlier. But I guess they can't do that because everyone has to vote, and there's a whole big campaigning process, and then, you know, there's the nominations, and then all these things.
Wow. So you really.
So it's a little exhausting, but this was a great year for movies, which is nice, which makes it like worthwhile. I feel like. Like, there was really, I mean, you know, no matter what wins Best Picture, a great movie is going to win Best Picture, whether it's 12 Years a Slave, whether it's Gravity, whether it's American Hustle, which I don't think is going to happen, but all those movies are really great. This is just a good year.
Let me ask you this. Do you get asked on to HuffPost Live? Like, do they, when they...
Oh, yeah.
What?
Oh, all the time.
Oh, so you're interviewed on HuffPost Live all the time about movies.
Not an interview. It's like a, you know, I'm a panelist or whatever.
Yeah.
Featured a guest.
A featured guest. What else?
Who I don't know. I don't know what you would call it. I don't know what you would call it.
Wow. And they keep asking you back.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I have a very good relationship with a lot of the hosts, with Ricky Camilleri, who hosts down there.
So are you in the same building? Is that it?
Yeah, we're in the same building.
All right. So what's next for Chris Rose? What can we expect in 2014 in movies?
Oh, a lot of, I hope as much good stuff as we had this year, but I have a feeling it's going to be pretty bleak because all the good directors have already released their movies. You know, the last 2 years we've seen movies from Steven Spielberg, Quentin Tarantino, Martin Scorsese, you know, all the good directors have put out stuff. So this year we'll have to see what happens and if there's any good stuff.
What about Darren Aronofsky's movie? What's the buzz on the street
it's
about
supposedly,
that?
Supposedly, it's kind of crazy, I think. Him and the studio were differing on opinions of the cut of the film, and they were trying to figure out if they wanted to show it to Christian audiences or whatever, but apparently his cut is going to come out, and it looks ridiculous to me, but I mean, I'll trust Darren Aronofsky, he's a good director.
Wait a second, so it's about the story of Noah?
Yes.
All right.
So when they were test screening it, they did like, a bunch of different versions. They had a bunch of different versions, maybe some that I don't know this, but I'm assuming if they're showing different versions of the film to test audiences, some that are going to lean harder on the religious aspect, some that are going to lean harder on the, you know, non-religious aspect or the action aspect or whatever they're doing with this story.
All right.
But it looks interesting. Russell Crowe plays Noah. Do you know who he is?
Yeah, I'm familiar with Russell Crowe.
I don't know. I don't know about you.
Wait, which one's Russell Crowe? The guy from Gladiator.
Are you serious? Okay, yes, Gladiator.
Right, okay. Yeah, no, go. I know.
You're on safe shores there, buddy.
I get confused. There's a lot of Russells. Show business these days, it seems like.
Russell Brand.
Yeah. So what else? What else can we talk about?
I don't know, Sam. What else? What have you been up to for the last year?
Just not watching movies, apparently.
Do you watch The Walking Dead, Chris Rosen?
You watch The Walking Dead?
No, come on.
What?
Thank you.
No.
What about the release of a new House of Cards? Are you going to watch that?
I do want to watch that, but I have not watched it yet.
Have you watched it? You've not watched any of it?
No.
What
highly overrated,
So you
Chris.
Just go to movies, right? You don't watch any TV, is that it?
I've been watching True Detective. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I hear good things.
That one's good. And Girls, Love Girls, and Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the basics. Basic building blocks of TV.
All right. Well, Chris, so your guess is going to be, what, you said 12 Years a Slave?
Yeah, 12 Years a Slave. I wouldn't be shocked if it loses, but I have a hard time believing it will lose.
And who's going to be best actor and actress?
Matthew McConaughey and Cate Blanchett for Blue Jasmine.
All right. There we have it.
But you should really watch 12 Years a Slave. Of all those movies, I think you would like it the most, and I think you would get a lot out of it.
All right. Well, I will do that. Chris Rosen, always a pleasure. We will talk to you in a year.
Sam, talk to you next year.
Wait. When are the Golden Globes?
That happened already. You missed it.
Shoot. Well, then we'll get you maybe earlier next year for the Golden Globes. What's the next big thing to come up after the Oscars?
Nothing, thank God. Maybe the Emmys in September or the Tonys. I mean,
no, I don't think we'll do that.
No, right, probably buddy. Not. All right, Sam.
Well, when do you get married?
July.
All right. Well, so what?
Look for your invite.
What date should I save?
I'll tell you offline, but you can look for the invite in the mail.
All right. Well, let me give you this. I am congratulating. Shofar to announce your wedding. You've already proposed, right? I mean, Case has already said yes.
Well, he's gone.
He left? Chris, are you there? Did he go? Wow. Did he hang up on me? There you have it. Wow. That was...
He needed to go get a piece from Variety to post.
That was a little abrupt. That was a little abrupt. Well, all right. So, I mean, I'm going to assume she said yes already.
I think you kind of rained on him the whole time, maybe even more than usual.
What do you mean?
Well, let's see. You started with being shocked that he could get married.
Well, I mean,
then
that's
the
not...
intern thing.
That's
and then,
not...
I don't know. He seemed actually a little bit less, I don't know what the right word is, a little bit less exuberant than the Rosen I've heard in the past.
Yeah.
He seemed a little bit like, yeah, it's Oscar season.
Yeah.
12 Years
there
a Slave
was definitely
will change your
a,
life, whatever.
There was definitely there was a slight, he seems a little bit disappointed in the, you know, the movies are good, but there's not the, it doesn't sound like there's the controversy that he needs. You know what I mean?
I mean, I don't want to get into this, but I would think with the Woody Allen thing alone, there would be enough controversy to go around.
Right.
How will that
Woody
affect...
Allen wasn't...
No, but that a lot of people are saying that that's going to affect Cate Blanchett's nomination. Or, I mean, not her nomination, but her winning for Blue Jasmine.
Hmm.
There's, you know, that there's some of that going on.
Wow.
Maybe he's getting married. Maybe it's time to put away childish things.
That's right. All right. Okay, do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? It's going to be a Freebies Friday because we're not going to be around next week. So what the hey? Why not? Folks, I will tell you that it is your support that keeps this program going. There's only one way I'm going to get a verified Twitter account, and that is if you become a member of the Majority Report. And even then, I can't guarantee it. But you can become a member at majority.fm. Pennies a day. Ladies and gentlemen, pennies a day. You can also support this program if you buy crap from Amazon, go to our Amazon link. You can find it at majorityreportkickback.com, majorityreportkickback.com. Click on the Amazon link, bookmark it. Always buy your Amazon junk through there. You will notice no difference, but we will get a kickback. And, of course, just coffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Get 10% off with the coupon code MAJORITY. What else? Give us a review on iTunes. That's very helpful. Also costs you nothing. Review on iTunes. Pick up the app today, majorityapp.com. Join over 4,000 of your fellow listeners. A fraction of the show, but get a sense of how many people out there have smartphones. I still think we got another 4,000 to 10,000 people who just haven't gotten the app because they don't think they need it. But you do. Look. You may get your, you may use some other form to podcast on your smartphone, or maybe you just download it on your computer or iTunes. But there's nothing more convenient than this. All right, what do we got from Jimmy Reefer Cake this week?
He made a song apparently about a looks like to be an online cartoon called O Change, where it takes place in Maine. So he felt he needed to make a theme song for them.
What are you talking about?
And he sent it to us, yes.
It seemed like a little libertarianish from Jimmy, a little bit of product placement.
Well, all right. I mean, why not?
We'll see it.
Jimmy has been good enough to give us a song each week. Why not?
He was good enough to call while he's cross-country skiing yesterday, which I thought was tremendous.
Yes, that could have been very dangerous. So why not? Let's allow him an indulgence every now and then.
O-Chang, representing the state of Maine. Why don't you roll us up a jib-a-bub? These cartoons are insane. I had enough of this cold friggin' weather. Going up to camp, gonna drink whatever. O-Chang, O-Chang, representing the great state of Maine.
Well, all right. Very nice. Jimmy Reefer Cake really likes that cartoon. All right. Well, the number is 646-257-3920 is the number. If you want to be a part of the program, 646-257-3920 is the number. Of course, you can also you can call with one touch of your finger on the app. The app will call us, and you will be on the program. Or you can IM us at Majority FM or via the app. Let's go to the IMs. Interg, I had no idea you guys were also available on Microsoft Zune. It's a good thing you advertised that on your website. We actually get a decent amount of downloads from Zune. I don't even know that they still existed.
I actually don't think they make them anymore. I think it's just whoever has it. There you go.
By Minerly, ask Charlie Pierce what he's going to steal next from Driftglass. Not sure I follow. Is that the saying that he's stealing stuff from their blog? It's too late now. Anime Marks. The song at 12:07 was painful to listen to. What was that?
That's the one by They Might Be Giants.
Oh, wow.
It's a good song. I like that song, too.
Chris Rosen verified on Twitter, what the hell I could do his job. I'm a junior entertainment editor for HuffPo. They don't pay us, though we're kind of like bloggers. Matt's the public shaming Tumblr guy. Christopher Rosen has no right to talk to him like that. Please, someone get Matthew Film Guy on. The interview was more underwhelming than I thought it would be. The Genius says, the guest suggestion, United Steelworkers President Leo Gerard, also AFL-CIO VP, talk about his effort at union globalization, the only way to fight back at some of these nation-rape trade assaults, TPP. Also, is supporting co-op survival in Detroit, also North American energy independence. Love, Charlie Pierce. Yeah, someone named Lauren did some progressive cross-pollination by sponsoring a segment of Mike Malloy's show Wednesday night for a message. She praised the Majority Report, Sam Cedar, as the next big best thing to Mike himself. Of course, Malloy concurred. Bueno, yes, yes, absolutely. Thank you, Lauren, for that. Let's see. We'll go to the phones in a bit. 646-257-3920. Wise line, Pert. It's your pity Valentine, Charlie Brown. Lawyer Matthew, nice work on Hayes last night. Looked like you were terrified of Katrina Vandenheuvel. We'll look it over. You know, it was funny. I watched myself, and I did. I looked a little bit shifty-eyed, and it's that camera angle makes it look.
Sure.
They call it the J-angle in the business.
The J-angle?
For the shifty Jew.
Jesus. Happy birthday to Nikki, says Larry Matthew. Wow. Michael.
It's my heritage. I can make that joke.
There you go. All right, let's go.
It was the Irish part of my heritage making that
That's
joke.
That's right. Let's go to the phone. Calling from a 901 area code. Who's this?
Hey, this is Morgan in Memphis.
Hey, Morgan. How you doing?
Doing pretty good. Obviously, want to talk about the VW issue.
Please.
Yeah, so you were talking with Charlie about the Tennessee legislature. We are in the top 10 every year and as far as, like, dumbest legislatures in the country. We're up there with Kansas. Actually, we had an issue in Memphis. There's a guy out in the suburbs that tried to initiate a similar law to what was going on in Kansas, with basically banning, gays from, you know, having like the wedding caterers and stuff like that could discriminate, right, against gays. And, he was so publicly shamed that he withdrew his name from the bill within 2 days, which was kind of an interesting development.
My understanding is in Kansas the Senate is not going to take up that bill. But I just saw that on Twitter about an hour ago from Dave Weigel, I think. So I don't know if that's the case, but I mean, stupid is one thing, but this seems to have like a real ideological, well, I guess that does too. But I mean, this is I mean, how are people reacting in Tennessee to this? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, I guess, you know, I was going to kind of give you like a little political history, if I could do that, that I think would kind of help explain why there's such a visceral reaction to unionization in the South. So I guess, you know, you can draw this back to you know, with everything in the South. When slavery ends, you have this kind of reorganization of society, and all these people who were relying on slavery go in, you know, they're agricultural, so they go into the farms and are sharecroppers along with the freed slaves. And I think what happens is the people who own the farm start noticing a camaraderie developing with blacks and whites. There's a bond forming, and the answer that the Southern aristocracy brings in is industrialization in the form of cotton mills. And what they do is all these able-bodied whites who were working with blacks in the fields go into the cotton mills, and it's very Dickensian. There's no labor standards, but the class struggle is kind of suppressed by a racial cohesion and a deference to the local oligarchy that these white workers feel. And, you know, as time goes on, like, Jim Crow is kind of defined by this bond of, you know, we are all whites united together. And the New Deal kind of chipped away at that, and so did, to a lesser extent, the progressive movement of the early kind of 20th century. But, you know, there's always this racial bond that is uniting whites of all classes to kind of stop unionization, because what unionization represents in some form is a class struggle. And, you know, this culminates in Memphis in 1968 with the garbage worker strike, right, and Dr. King's assassination. So right after that, what happens is white labor unions in the public sector emerge. There's teachers, cops, firemen. And, you know, what it goes to show is the stakes for unionization in the South kind of cut to the core of Republican politics and, you know, their ability to kind of control the population here. So, you know, if that's my riff on why I think this is such a, you know, they're freaking out about it, you know, and they're obviously undercutting their relationship with them.
I think that makes some sense to me, and I think, you know, it's also just part of what is now, I think, sort of that's recognizable as the broader sort of Republican project in this country and the conservative project in this country. But I'm just curious, is this getting a lot of play on the local news? What are the local news people saying? Are they expressing, like, can you believe that the state, the legislature is doing this? Or is it, I mean, what is the general feel? I mean, you know, obviously you have one perspective, but I mean, from your perspective, what is the general feel? Are people outraged by this? Are they just not paying attention to it? What is it?
Well, yeah, so locally it's not a big deal. Chattanooga could be in Oklahoma from Memphis. I mean, it's such a large geographic area that, like, what happens on the eastern side of the state doesn't necessarily make it over here. So locally there's not been kind of a big uproar about it. You know, where I'm seeing it is from national media sources. So I don't know. You know, the senator is from, Bob Corker is from Chattanooga. He used to be mayor there, and maybe that's why he's interjecting himself into this.
Right.
But, you know, Memphis is largely considered to be like Mississippi North, kind of, you know. It's not, we're kind of ostracized from the state in a lot of ways, because for one, we're a blue city, you know, we're a majority African American city, and we're fairly progressive because of that. So we are constantly under attack from, Nashville. There's a guy named Mark Morris, who all lives right, out in the suburbs here, and
Thanks. We got to jump, but thanks for the update. Yeah. I appreciate it. Interesting stuff. Appreciate the call.
All right.
Bye.
Yeah.
Let's take one more phone call, then we'll go back to the IMs. You call them from a 495 area code. Who's this?
Am I on?
Yep.
Oh, great. Hi. This is Dennis from Germany.
Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Great. I found your show just recently because I wanted to look up the VW plant, and I found a YouTube clip you talking about it.
Yeah, we just heard from somebody from Tennessee who was sort of given their outline as to why there's such intense hostility towards unions there. What's your perspective from Germany?
So I got to know about this theme because we got sent the envelope with a ballot for the upcoming Works Council elections in May. So normally you throw out everything that comes from the union, but in that case you read actually through the stuff that they sent with it. I gotta say, this is amazing how your politicians cow down to companies. This is nuts. As if, I don't know. That's basically it. Amazing how your politicians cow down to them.
Yeah, but the fascinating thing here is that by all accounts, it seems that Volkswagen actually wants the union and wants the workers' councils. And so this is the politicians sort of interjecting themselves. Not only they're not even kowtowing to the company as much as they are to some other master, I guess, on some level. They just don't. Is it your sense that Volkswagen is encouraging of this type of thing? I mean, are you in a position to have any sense of that?
I work for a joint venture of Volkswagen and Deutsche Bahn, so the national railway company. So to transport cars from the plants to the coast to send them off. Basically, my understanding is that there's a great working relationship between management and works councils. For example, normally if you're renting out space, you don't have a roof to put solar panels on. So the moment the VW plant decided that they wanted to make use of solar panels on their roof, the Works Council intervened and made the proposal that workers should be able to invest in the solar panels on the plants itself, because they usually don't have the possibility to put them on their roof. And by that, there was, because this isn't far-fetched, the whole theme, batteries for cars and solar power generation, you're right just back to the car company. You want your workers to get involved in this stuff, to get a grip on the whole theme.
And so why would the workers invest in the solar panels? I mean, invest in the generation of their electricity? I'm not sure I follow.
The panels that were put on the plants of Volkswagen in Germany, the Works Council arranged for the possibilities of workers to pay for them and reap the benefits.
And
the power is sold to the company, and we get paid a little out of it.
All right, you understand it's like that when you tell an American audience, okay, what you've just told us, it sounds like some type of nirvana, like this weird, it doesn't just sound foreign because it's obviously literally foreign from our perspective. But the idea that a company would say, like, we want to put solar panels on our roof to power our what we're doing here. And then the workers say, well, I'll tell you what. We will invest in the development of those panels so that we can have a stake in selling you the electricity that comes from those panels so that you won't have to make that capital investment. It'll be a side job that is supporting of our work, where everybody is a winner. The environment is a winner. The company is a winner. The workers are winners. A situation like that, and that they're making that determination as a workers' council, that situation is, it's almost embarrassing that it seems so far-fetched. Like that level of cooperation, that level of benefit that accrues to so many different aspects of society, as you describe it, is so far afield from what we have in this country that it's almost embarrassing. In fact, I'm surprised that we even have the capacity to take your phone call because it feels like you're calling from like way into the future.
Oh, I just want to say I found you your show through actually because I wanted to know what the news about this whole thing is in the United States. So I got to your channel. I enjoy it.
Wow, I'm glad.
Pretty funny crowd you are.
I'm glad, and I'm glad you enjoy it. I also bet that your internet connection is much faster than most of the people who download here, and I bet it's also cheaper, and that's about to get worse for us in this country. But I appreciate your watching the show. Pick up the app. I think it should work over there. You can get it on a smartphone. I have no doubt that your technology is better than ours. And
if not, you could probably come to an arrangement with Volkswagen to subsidize getting, yeah,
but,
for educational purposes.
Yes, please, yeah. Feel free to send us more missives from the future. Someday, hopefully, we will catch up to you guys. Thanks for the phone call.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
That's just so stunning.
It is.
You hear, like, people are like, we've arranged these things that actually are totally logical. They work for everybody. And we're sitting here like, that
what?
Sounds like an absolute impossibility.
Do you guys, like, just when it's time to eat, does a sliding door come open and you just simply say what you want to eat? Like, I want some bratwurst, and it just shows up there, and, like, it just shows up. It just materializes, and, like, you guys are still making cars. Do they hover?
I was debating with some of the
It's just unbelievable. How effed up this country can be at times.
Like they're like, no, we're working on the hovering car. That will come soon. But first, we make sure everyone can benefit from this.
Yeah. Everyone benefit from it? What?
We will not have the hover car here.
No, sir. You're not going to send us back to old Europe by having your hover crafts. God forbid we're going to have these heathen, agnostic, atheist, hovercrafts come into our town. No way!
Michael, can we hear Southern Bells?
I can't do it. I can't. It'll make me more sick.
Well, I'm just absolutely nonplussed.
Y'all pay workers to build the solar panels on their own buildings? That sounds like some type of Jewish Sam Cedar, a collusion, and it's against Christmas and all sorts of other horrible things. I thought your people didn't like them anyways. Don't y'all remember history?
Oh, Lord. I don't know if that's encouraging or depressing to hear that stuff. I mean, it's encouraging.
I was debating with the Republican.
It's like literally, like, I feel like I'm talking to someone from the future.
I understand. I get it. I was debating this Republican friend, and I cited some example from Germany or something. He's like, oh, well, always with the Western Europeans. I'm like, yeah, because they do it better.
Like,
I was like, oh, always with the Michael Jordan or Kobe Bryant reference.
Other human beings.
But it's always like, yeah, but that would be like saying, like, always comparing us to the best example of doing something. What a bullshit move.
Yeah,
that
what's
is.
Next? We're going to have somebody from France to call us up and tell us that they get health care and it doesn't cost them anything? What are these wild tales we're hearing from the future? Mazareth. Hey, guys, the stream is cutting out intermittently. Chem Champion. Once you guys return from collective vacations, you should have Sirota on about this PBS. Yes, yes. I have that actually sitting right on my desk. You're absolutely right. You just write that, and we'll book him now. Thedex Fool, where's Charlie's jingle like on the Stephanie Miller show? Her sexy liberal stand-up tour resumes tomorrow with Fugan saying, Carlos Alzraki, both of whom had babies. Fugel saying have another baby? No, he's been living off that one baby. That baby's like 2 years old. You should do a podcast with these gentlemen about raising progressive kids in a Tea Party world. That's a good idea. Martin, this idea that retirement is now the new lazy is new to me. One of the few middle class goals, retirement or being able to retire with a little early, was looked upon as a success. The right wing problem with retirement is now the conversation moves to how. With the death of the pension and the unreliable 401ks, the word union can't be far away, or God forbid, corporate responsibility to participate in their employees' retirement funding like CEOs' golden parachutes. Workers are left with nothing more than Social Security. Real quick on Christie, he seems to have left in a national election is the same thing that killed Romney. All he seems left has the same thing that killed Romney. He has to go hard right, crazy right. You're absolutely right. Yes. Yes. Yes.
He's a more skillful politician than Romney.
I think so. I think that's also true. But I just don't
see it. It's not going to happen. But he's much, much. It's like the difference between Bill Clinton and Al Gore in terms of watching them do the same thing. And with Clinton, you're like, wow,
yeah,
that's incredibly well done. And with Gore, it's just, oh, okay, you're pandering.
Monorail, can gay EMT or waiters refuse service to homophobic congressmen? Good question. Chris Christie walking into CPAC, I envision one of the scenes from Freak circa 1932, not to offend circus performers by comparing them to CPAC attendees.
It's a great movie, by the way.
What's that?
Freaks.
Godwin, I went to fix the debt youth event. Their Social Security media strategy went totally pear-shaped because I was the only guy tweeting and blogging. Doesn't take much social media PR savvy to screw up an AstroTurfer's weekend. Also, one of the leading members of the local chapter went to work at Bain Capital last year, standing up for the youth of America. DR, hi, Sam. I love the tie between Sam Zell and Randy and Valentine's you made. The paradox of their thinking is that Zell says we should all emulate the 1%, while in Valentine's scenario, they show their belief that inequality is natural and inevitable. So we're supposed to try to be like them, knowing we'll probably all fail, and the only explanation for our failure is that the 99% are born losers. I think the German word you were looking for is Dummkopf. That word also may apply to Chris Rosen. Oh, that's not nice. 626, the poll tax in Britain under Thatcher had nothing to do with voting. The tax was officially called the community charge and was a plan to change the way local government raised taxes. Instead of basing the tax on the value of the property, it would be based on the number of people who lived in the property. That is what got the public into the streets rioting. Theo Ward, about that report predicting 2 million people will quit their jobs because of the ACA, am I right in thinking that these people are only working for health care and they don't need to work for other expenses like food and rent? Yes. So, in other words, it's somebody who is either starting to draw some type of retirement, some people maybe who might want to take early Social Security, or people who are, you know what, I've paid off my mortgage, or I live with my, it's generally, you're going to be looking at generally older people, although some young people might say, I've saved up enough money where I can spend a year and try out, you know, I can try out that, you know, my new, see if I can monetize my Tumblr, blah, blah, or whatever it is.
Flavor trip.
And, you know, like you hear stories of people, like of grandmothers who say, I quit my job and now I'm going to work basically to take care of my grandkid so that my daughter or my son, you know, they can both work. and I'm going to take care of my grandkid, and they'll give me half the price they would pay for a babysitter or for daycare. Or they give me the same they pay for daycare. But they want, you know, they'd rather have their grandmother take care of the kid. Those are the type of situations you're looking at. If that's the case, I assume these are middle-class jobs that would be open up to people who are in lower-income brackets. Sounds like ACA just created 2 million jobs to me. Yep. It's definitely creating 2 million jobs. I don't know who necessarily will take those jobs, but it's definitely, yes, of course. Dekraut. Dies Idioten signed ungoblich besserich. I'm not even going to try. Alex B. Saw you on Haze last night and managed to spot the rainbow loom. Next time you got to move that coffee cup, though. Any idea why they moved Haze into that tiny corner set as opposed to his old one? I think they're working on another set in the other room. And when they come back, he'll have a improved set. Why does Twitter verification matter so much? I have no idea. I was simply making a joke with Chris Rosen. I guess it's important.
There are people who use Twitter and see that little check mark next to someone's name and assumes they should follow that person because they are important for some reason or another.
But it wasn't the idea so that you couldn't parody counts, is that it?
Yes. But now so many people have that check mark, it doesn't even mean anything.
Are screeners the whole movie or just like an executive summary? No, they're a whole movie. But they sometimes have like a label at the bottom. This is a screener. It's being digitally tracked so that you can't, I don't know. Jimmy Swim recently released fourth quarter global economic conditions survey done by International Management Accountants shows that some of the strongest readings yet. However, emerging markets are caught in the turmoil of the taper. Fed tapering its stimulus. Also, the U.S. is still reeling from the ripples of the federal government shutdown. In other words, sorry, GOP, but government spending is needed to help the economy. Sabotaging the federal government does harm to the economy after all.
Why do you get some movies and not others when you get those?
I don't know. Some companies want to put out screeners. Others are afraid of it being stolen, I guess. I don't know. In response to the IM someone sent earlier, Driftglass Blogs does a great podcast called The Professional Left. Oh, yeah. No, I have heard of that, of the podcast. Should have him on the show. I'll check it out. Okajik, will you put that down for me? Chris Rosen, never heard of him. Who is this kid? The high school sophomore, son of your neighbor down the hall? He does algebra homework. Where's Matthew Film Guy? He's the best. Ooh. Kyle, let's rename Matt and Michael Mondays to simply the Muppets. Chris Rosen is a little...
I don't like that idea.
Chris Rosen is a little movie of the weekish. That guy was your movie reviewer for a year? Dark Days.
It was a little bit more than a year, actually.
Mason, hi, does this work? Hambens, Ham Hugs member. Ham Shugs member. Hey, Sam, I'm thinking of giving up a lush life of janitor and forming a startup in West Virginia. Can you help me with the name? I was thinking Founding Fathers Medium Security Farms or Gigantic Bald Eagle Poultry. Both could feature massive runoff.
Well, wait, what was it? It was Freedom Industries.
And Patriot.
Then Patriot. All we need is like Liberty something to screw up.
That's
something.
That's right. General Welfare. Let's go to the phones. Call from Connecticut. Who is this? Call from a 203 area code. Who's this?
You might have to call back into the system.
Yeah, I will do that.
Stay on the line, whoever you are. Stay on.
Okay. Bear with us, caller. Bear with us, caller. I'll try one more time. All right, you called from a 203 area code. Who's this?
Hey.
It's Sam. Jay from Connecticut. What's up, Jay?
Oh. Boy, you guys were sure sycophantic with that German guy. Reminded me of that... gag on The Simpsons where there was a Walt Disney cartoon called Nazi Supermen Are Our Heroes.
You didn't like it.
It was striking is all, because I happen to know that you are of the Jewish faith. And
well, I don't blame him for for what happened 70 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's a water under the bridge.
Yeah.
I was thinking, Chris used to be, Chris Rosen, I call him Chris.
Yeah.
He I remember I used to send those IMs every week saying, please stop having this guy. But today he got me thinking, and not in a good way. But you're right. He didn't talk about Blue Jasmine and the controversy there.
Yeah.
And have you seen Blue Jasmine by any chance?
I have
Sam?
Not.
No.
I have not.
Yeah. And even though it's on stream and everything. Well, I saw it, and I can see why suddenly this Woody Allen controversy has sprung out, because all the information had been public for the past 20-odd years.
Right.
And now suddenly it's breaking news every day. And having seen the movie, I can see why. This movie, that Kate Blanchett character, is, I think, a nasty representation of Mia Farrow, and her actions and her behaviors are sort of reminiscent of things that have happened over the course of the Woody Allen controversy, I think.
Well,
he's
I'll watch
all
it.
These years to...
I'll watch it and see, but
because she's has been married to this man who has been disgraced, and ultimately in the movie, this is a spoiler, but it turns out she caused his disgrace by going.
Wait! What are you doing? You're the guy who's always complaining about my spoiling Skyfall.
Yeah, I said spoiler. Anyway.
Yeah, but,
anyway.
This is like the second Chris Rosen interview. What do you got, Jay? Come on. So,
not that important to the plot of the movie, but basically it's a movie you're watching this woman basically...
I will watch the movie.
She disintegrates emotionally over the course of the movie, and I think... And she's not a very sympathetic character. I think that this coming out now might have...
precipitated that?
Arrows might have...
Huh.
I think they might have heard about, the movie and the representation. They might have been kind of miffed and said, you know what, this asshole's got to be publicly reprimanded. And I think that's why.
I mean, it's hard to say. What triggers. But, look, the bottom line is that I would imagine that from Dylan's perspective that, it is. She's of an age where, she feels maybe more confident going public directly with this stuff. I don't know.
Well, usually something has happened to allow her to make that decision and take that action. And it might have been something like this that pushed.
Possibly.
I'm speculating, obviously, but I think it will impact on... Kate Blanchett is quite excellent in the role, but I think it will undermine her... getting an Academy Award for it.
All right,
she's
that.
Really good, and the movie is good to watch. And your friend Louis C.K. is in it,
right?
And he's very good for. And your other very good friend Andrew Dice Clay, who I know you used to pound beers with
That's
back in the day.
Oh, he's much older than me. No,
the two of you used to chase tail together, and he's in it too. He's not so bad. So
all right. All right, I got to jump, Jay.
So you can stream it tonight. Stream it on vacation.
All right, I may do that. Thanks.
Have a good
one. Listeners, when Sam says spoiler alert, the point is you change the channel of your radio and the show goes on. If you're calling in, you cannot say spoiler alert, because then we hang up on you and that ends the call.
Should have hung up. Johnny, I'm feeling nostalgic disagreeing with Rosen's film views. In my opinion, Wolf of Wall Street wasn't so great. It's just scene after scene of breasts, quaaludes, and cocaine.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that. I should probably...
Ronald Reagan. Limbaugh is talking about his children books where Rush revered time travels on a magical horse called Liberty. Have you heard of those? Please have a critic on to review them. I have heard a little bit about those. That is a topic to actually do one time. Bingo Mosquito. Chris Rosen's verified on Twitter. He doesn't need it. However, the majority report where he is most vulnerable to parody. Oh, wait, he's gone now. Click. Also in Germany, the workers are educated enough to have thought of and then offered the idea to the company. Even American workers had thought of it. They would not dare offer out of being let go. Yeah, well, that's the whole point of the Workers' Council. A Square. Sam Rosen has risen from the dead. Did he get a bit smarter? Maybe it's his fancy title, The Impending Wedding. Good to see you and all last night, but would have liked to see you comment on the Corker VW union issue. Did you read Alex McGillis' article on Christie? I did, yes. Saw a few excerpts on MSNBC last night. Seems he weaves the story of the long game Christie was playing to burnish his image using transactional politics in New Jersey. The Torricelli factoid I was unaware of. Yeah, me too. Enjoy the week off. Happy Valentine's Day and Nikki's birthday. Hope you got a nice gift. I did, of course. The Kid Row, I have no idea what Jimmy Reef cake looks like, but I always picture the guidance counselor from Freaks and Geeks. The kind Cro-Mag. Julie, happy Valentine's Day, Sam, from sunny and hot Florida. You too, Julie. This conversation you had at the top of the show about the greater implications of not giving a Valentine to every kid is truly fascinating. The idea that has taken root in the GOP politics, that man cannot shape his own destiny, is truly futile. This Republican Party apparently isn't just pining for the days of robber barons, but wants to go all the way back to before the Enlightenment. Scary. I really do think there's something to that. I really do think that that notion of like, you've got to expose these kids to rejection at a very early age. So they prepare them for the rejection they're definitely going to get, you know, so that they can really, when they get their food stamps cut off, they'll know it's because of them. Scott Ricketts, please don't bring Rosen back unless Kyle is going to be on at the same time. Nathan Ray, hi from the UK. Have you heard about all the flooding over here? I've read a little bit about it. Now that it's reached the conservative home counties, Prime Minister Cameron has said, we're a wealthy country and money is no object. So why was the money an object when cutting disability living allowance and emergency room funding? I think you've answered your own question. Donna Cann, I wanted to weigh in on how much I love your libertarian debates. As a high school teacher, I think I'm qualified to say that libertarianism isn't a political philosophy so much as arrested development. They're the you're not the boss of me party, just like in high school students, but more consistently stoned. Militant apathy. So Tom Perkins wants more votes for rich people. They also want to end direct selection, election of senators, 17th Amendment. They are trying to create feudalism. I get that. What I can't understand are these people have no hopes of ever being rich or owning this much property, so inclined to support this insanity. That's the eternal question, isn't it? Montana Marxist. More worker control is always better, but we should remember that VW and European-type labor councils are a result of the co-opting of radical labor movements post-WW2. Often labor leaders are given incentives to sell out the workers they represent. German labor councils have a hand in suppressing wages below the general EU inflation rate. What the Europeans have that we are in genuine anti-capitalist political movements. Have that we need are genuine. Well, I mean, the irony here, though, is that if you want workers' councils, you have to bring in the union. So we are at a time of such low unionization rate in the private sector because government makes it so hard to unionize that It will have at least short term the reverse effect. It will reignite the union movement. In other words, it can't get any worse for unions in the private sector, anyways. C. McDonald, my nephew, Canadian, is finishing his master's in solar engineering in Germany. His entire tuition at the University of Freiburg is free. Again, with the future. The missing link, Oklahoma Senate endorses plan to effectively abolish the Electoral College, go with a candidate that wins the state's popular vote. Oklahoma becomes the first red state to vote this way. So far, states with 145 electoral votes have endorsed the plan. Still need enough states with the equivalent of 125 more to carry the change. And will that bring about the national popular vote, right? I mean, that's what we're looking for. That would be great. Cool J, 146. Have you covered how our do-nothing Governor Cuomo doesn't want New York City to raise its minimum wage because it would create chaos? I haven't, but I will. The idea is it would be unfair. You can't have wages down there because, you know, the whole argument is that you don't want to have one area have more tax incentives than another because it would drive business and it would make New York compete with each other. But if you're raising minimum wage in New York, you're not competing with any other towns. It would supposedly help other cities and towns. 328, hey, can you guys do a show on the German healthcare system and their corporate union laws? It would be interesting seeing the contrast. Yeah, that's a good idea. We'll look into that. Jeremo, wait a minute. I can hear the U.S. Corporations saying, because we need to install solar panels, we need to reduce your salary and discontinue eye care examination. Good point, Jeremiah. Big Frame, I'm having the same problem stream cutting out, even on Wi-Fi. Weird. Who's your girl? Driftglass always jokes that Pierce steals from him. Astrophysicist. Great hearing Chris Rosen again. Miss the good old days. Granola Crunching Lib. Back from the dead. The company name you're looking for is Liberty Media. Already exists. Rypop Phil. I wonder when Chris has time to do his homework. Now that the Air America isn't his primary job. And the final IM. Before we go on vacation, end of the week. Cool J 146. Actually, he's not do nothing. Speaking of the governor Cuomo, the lesser, he sticks his neck out to fillet corporations. All right, folks. See you in a week.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. Shifting in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I got to pay to play in. I know somehow the lights got graded somewhere before the credits faded, but my pilot light shining. Shine, pilot light, shining bright.